Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome, everyone, to Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast that, we ain't your grandpa's Star Wars podcast, so that's for sure. We're just here to have a great time, talk about Star Wars in ways that you might not have expected, but, man, I'm so excited. I'm even forgetting my name. My name is Matt Rushing. I'm one of the Jedi Masters here, and with me, as he is always, the wonderful, I'm running out of superlatives. Yeah, the John Mills.
The John Mills. Not to be confused an ordinary John Mills. I am the John Mills. Very important.
Yeah, I mean, the only one that matters to me.
The only one that matters to my grandfather's podcast.
Exactly.
I would actually, yeah. My grandfather, actually knowing him, I'm doing a pod. Like, if I met him in like spirit form or something, I'm doing a podcast. What's that? I'd describe it to him. He'd be like, radio? No, it's not radio. I just record things and broadcast them. Okay. Anyway.
So you're sure it's not radio?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, John, you know, this year of Rebels, we had so much going on, and I thought it would be fun because we had the fall finale this week, and I thought, you know, it would be good to go ahead and talk about it and see what's going on there. And so I wanted to ask you, so we talked about the beginning. We talked about the first episode, and you had made some predictions for Rebels and what you thought was going to happen. And your prediction, if I recall correctly, was that they were not going to really follow up on the storyline with the Bendu, that things were pretty much wrapped up by that first episode.
The holocron. I was saying that that Ezra's arc felt cheated to me in the beginning of the season, and that the holocron was basically done with by that point.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially done with.
With that in mind, just wanted to, we've had Visions and Voices, our fall finale.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel now? Do you feel like they've come full circle a little bit and given you more of what you hoped, that just wasn't, oh, it's all done? Do you feel like they've redeemed themselves a little bit, or was it not enough?
Look, I really enjoyed the fall finale. Spoilers, to answer that question though, I feel like the rest of the season at certain points was, for lack of a better term, just messing around. Mm-hmm. They should have gotten to this sooner. The fall finale has been strong, but it contributes to this sort of bipolar nature of the series where it can't seem to decide, does it want to go ahead and have impactful stories every week? Or does it, you know, like this is just like season two, where we were like, oh, well, you know, it started strong and it's kind of like, eh. And then it had a strong fall finale and we're like, oh, can't wait to see what comes next. And then it's like they're just throwing breadcrumbs at us. That's just my impression up to this point. What's yours at?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting because, you know, let's start at the very beginning because I think it's a very good place to start. And at least it creates a song. But we're not going to sing it. We don't have time.
There you go.
Like you said, the show started off really strong. You know, you had the opening TV movie, you know, the whole hour event, Steps into the Shadow. And then, of course, Holocrons of Fate was fantastic. And, you know, and Tilly's Instruction, not bad, not great.
It existed. And it wasn't, you know, it was like, oh, it was all fan service. And it was like, oh, okay.
What I think we could both agree there, and the reason that it didn't feel as strong is because you ended up only rescuing two pilots. You did all of this work, and yet all you get out of it is two pilots that we still haven't seen again.
Well, and the only reason we're supposed to care about them is because we already know their names. You know, like, it's an origin story for Wedge and Hobby. And it's like, oh, okay. All right, then. You know?
Exactly. And it seemed silly to tell the story and only have those two come out of it. Again, it just seemed like a lot of work for two people. And
yes.
Yeah, you're right. It's fan service, and that's pretty much it.
And as a note, it was written by Gary Whitta, for anybody that doesn't know that. And that is that the fact that it was sort of surface level fan service, I wonder now all about that draft of, you know, he handed over a draft of Rogue One, and then they reworked mm-hmm. that thing. I kind of like, if this is an example,
a lot of times.
Yeah, I know. But if this is an example of what his first draft might have been like, I can kind of understand why they felt they needed work.
No, I completely agree with you, because, you know, so then we move into Hera's Heroes, which I thought was an excellent episode. We got Thrawn.
Yep.
And we got more on the Twi'leks. We went back to Ryloth. Mm-hmm. We built on the Ryloth arc we got in the Clone Wars, so that was fantastic. I really enjoyed that episode. The Last Battle. Now, if you don't mind me saying so, I feel like that was how you do fan service, especially for everyone who mm-hmm. were Clone Wars fans.
Yes.
You know, we really haven't had a chance to talk about that. What did you think of that episode? Because I know I really loved it, and I thought it was, this is the way you have fun, but at the same time impact a previous series.
On top of the obvious tie-in and everything, it actually had a theme. It actually felt important, regardless of whether it was a Star Wars story. Like, that is what I want to spend my time watching. You're asking me to fork over 22 minutes a week, and I know that might not seem like a lot, but, you know, when you got three kids, that's a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you're asking me for 22 minutes. That is the type of thing where, even if it was the first episode of Rebels I'd ever watched, and even if I hadn't watched the Clone Wars, I knew what was going on. I knew why it was important, and I knew the theme they were speaking to. That, to me, that's what makes that a stellar episode. Similar reaction from your end?
Yes. I think also what made it so fun was the fact that I was a Clone Wars fan, and I had seen all of that show.
Sure.
And to have that, you know, and what was so interesting here is the way that that connects with some things that you will read. I'm not going to spoil it for you, John, but you'll read in the Catalyst book. And so I think that's very interesting. And there's some minor connections there. So just those little things like that, all of that made that episode so much fun. And I it's not, like you said, not just fun, but I mean, it was the kind of stuff that was the kind of episode where they were legitimately playing with the Star Wars toys together.
Yeah.
When you brought your prequel toys mm-hmm. and your original series toys together, and you'd have them battle against each other.
Sure.
I mean, that's, there's a joy to that.
Well,
and, but like you said, there was actually a bigger theme running through it that made it seem more important than, oh, we're just playing with the toys.
And on top of that, the characters were intelligent and problem solvers. There was an issue, and it wasn't just a deus ex. It wasn't just, okay, it's the fifth commercial break, so we got to come back and fix this. It was these characters making decisions that made them feel like they were actually people making decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and it was the first time you ever saw anybody in this time period kind of talk about the Clone Wars and realize that there weren't really any winners.
Right.
You know, the Jedi lost, the Separatists lost, everybody, even the Republic lost because it turned into the Empire.
Right.
Like, there are no winners in this, and the only winner is Palpatine. You know, they don't come right out and say that because, you know, I don't think Ezra's thinking that far.
Right.
But, I mean, that's the conclusion you come to as a watcher. And as a viewer, I think that's really spectacular. The next episode we got was Imperial Super Commandos.
Yes.
And I think, you know, last year we had the small episode they did, the one episode with Sabine, where we met Fenn Rau for the first time.
Yes.
At least in Rebels. We had seen him before, if you've read the Son of Dathomir comic. And interesting that here, though, we really see kind of what George thought of, I think, the Mandos. They're just kind of muscle for hire.
Right.
You know, and they really don't, I mean, they're just not good people. You know, they're like cheap muscle for hire.
Right. Yeah. It did flesh out. It was also, and the thing is, I think it is important, you know, while we talk about these two episodes, to cast back again, a look at the Antilles extraction, which again was all surface, had no real theme to it, was just there and was, you know, basically just walked in and said, we're going to tell you how Wedge joined the rebellion. And here we're talking about two other episodes that have all of these ties, that have these arcs, that have this further fleshing out of the world building and everything that gets us up to where we want to get to with the original film from 1977, while at the same time playing around with original concept art, which was really, honestly, of that Mando episode, the best part was seeing, you know, I love it when they bring like just that original sort of Ralph McQuarrie-esque concept art out. And they're just like, you know what? We always wanted to see this on screen. And I'm like, yeah, me too. That's great. Thank you.
You know, I'm right there with you. I think it is really cool. And like you said, it was tying things together. So it's beginning to slowly fill in this idea of, you know, one of the reasons that I think they chose Sabine as a character, you know, that they want to continue that Mando story. They're obviously things about the Mando story that we're still going to continue. You know, we know that from the Ahsoka book and other things, that this was going to be a group that was, we were going to play with. There was more story to tell there. And part of that is because the Clone Wars got cut off, and they wanted to, I think, continue to flesh that out in a way in which George saw that playing out, especially with, you know, the Clone Wars doing something very different with the Mandos than fans had ever expected. And I think Rebels is continuing in that. And I'm really excited to see where that continues to go in season 3 and then hopefully season 4, because I think we're going to get some really interesting stuff with the Mandalorians. And I can't wait to see that happen, especially if we, my favorite female Mando personally, Bo-Katan. I really want to see more of it. Well, between her and Satine, but they're a different type of Mando.
Yeah, so. They are. They're totally different types of Mandos.
And plus, Satine can't come back. She was.
Spoilers! Spoilers! That's only been out for several years.
Yeah. Dang it. I'm so sorry. I should have given the spoiler alert. That's when we play, John, the soundbite there of the Rebel. That's when we play the soundbite there, John, from the Rogue One trailer.
I'll see what I can do about that.
Okay. So the season continued, and I was excited about this episode before I actually saw it, and then I saw it. Rogue's Iron Squadron.
Yeah.
And, oh, man. Aside from seeing the Outrider-style cargo ship, there wasn't much to like about this
please.
Episode.
The first time when I saw the ship, I was like, oh, neat. They're really reaching into the bag there and bringing Dash Rendar back into. I'm like, all right, that's real. Oh, yeah. Okay. Basically by the end of that episode, I was half watching at best. I was like, I was on my phone. I was like, yep, still not digging this. So.
Well, and what's frustrating about it was the first time that we've gotten any backstory for Commander Sato.
Right.
And that should have been interesting.
Yes.
You know, that should have been something that we all cared about, because I think he is a character that I would actually like to know more about. He's leading this rebel group here that we see, and I would love to know more about him, where he comes from, what his backstory is. But we barely scratch the surface of that. We obviously know that there's some connection between him and Thrawn too, it seems like.
It's
awful.
It was eh. And then it led into
it's eh, yes.
Yeah.
Gary Whitta's second job here. The Wincathu job, or the why thank you job, if you want to look at it that way.
Yes.
Since that's what that actually means.
Yes.
Since it took place on Thanksgiving. That's about the coolest thing that happened for that episode.
It wasn't a bad episode. I'm not gonna like kick it the way I would kick Iron Squadron, but at the same time it wasn't impactful, which I think gets back to, you know, my earlier point that the season by that point was exactly what I was afraid it was going to be, which was we're not really furthering anything from what we established in the beginning. We're just there. It's just happening.
You're right. And it's not a bad throwaway episode.
Yeah.
The problem is that at this point in the series, we need to stop doing throwaway episodes. It's just there's, you know, if Rebels has a fourth season and maybe a fifth, I don't know, who knows, but we really need to start getting down to the nitty gritty. We need to start really continuing to tell what we like to call here on this show in the 602 Club, our godfather. We need to tell the mythology that needs to be the mythology episode.
And the thing is, a tweak on this episode easily makes it feel more impactful and therefore more. And now, again, I enjoyed it. Anytime you bring Hondo back, I'm like, yep, on board. This is going to be fun. Just change the cargo they're going after. Have it be something that ties into, you know, what happened with Maul, or something that happened, or something,
exactly.
Something that they need to bring back to. Going and retrieving bombs, I get it. They're helping establish the rebellion, and everybody's doing their part to help the rebellion. But retrieving bombs doesn't feel, you know, for lack of a better term, I know this will sound dumb, but it doesn't feel heroic. I get it that they got to go on supply runs. I get it that they got to pick stuff up to you know.
But do we need to see all their supply runs?
Exactly.
Because we really have seen all of them.
Yeah, we're getting proton bombs. Oh, yeah. All right.
Well, and okay, so let's at this point, let's kind of count up the storylines that we have going that are impactful. We have the whole Jedi thing going on with Kanan and Ezra and the Bendu and Maul. So there's that storyline.
Yeah.
There's the Mandalorian storyline that we have going, the thread with Sabine and Fenn Rao.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Thrawn storyline that's in the background with the Empire.
Very much in the background.
Yes, with him and Callus and Price.
Yeah.
And so there's that. So that's three huge storylines. Plus, there's this whole thing about the fact that, you know, Rogue One is coming.
Yep.
And obviously, they're not going to let them play with that. And it's kind of like Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's the same exact thing
that
happened.
You're exactly right. That's what's killing this show. That is exactly what's killing this show, is they're not allowed. And the thing is, okay, as much as I hesitate to make the comparison, I still think it's, you know, sort of fair to say the reason, you know, as you're going through this, the reason why Clone Wars was able to work so much better is it didn't have that blanket hanging over it. If they wanted to go nuts and have a story arc that was crazy, they could do it. And I think it also gets to that they didn't embrace the Clone Wars storytelling style, which was arc of 2 to 4 episodes, so that each story breathed. And yeah, some stories went a little long, but most stories got more than 22 minutes to exist.
And part of this is, too, I completely agree with you. To build on top of that, I think the other thing is you can definitely tell Clone Wars had George behind it. And when George said, we're going to do this, you did that. You know, and you could go big, you could go for broke. I think the other thing on with all of this is, look at any Netflix show. Any Netflix show has found a way to have each episode weave into the next, telling the storylines, and that's what I feel like this show should be a little bit more like.
And that's where I think they get to their biggest problem, in that Rebels was born to try to create a property that was appealing to a newer, younger audience than we are. But the audience tuning in is us, by and large.
Exactly.
So, like, my kids don't even really care. I've tried to show Rebels to them, and they're like, yeah, okay. And this is what I think is, this would be a big hint to them that what they should have done, what they could still do technically, in my view, is split it, spin it off, have Rebels, have it on XD, and have it be the kids' show, and then spin off and just do Clone Wars Volume 2, because obviously you want to.
Well, and that's kind of the thing, you know, they have the Freemakers Adventures with the Lego Freemakers Adventures, which is super funny. And it's a really fun show, but definitely for kids, and it's not in canon, so they don't have to worry about any of that stuff. So that's what I feel like. That should be the real kid show. And then Rebels should basically be, like you said, Clone Wars Part 2, where it's okay to be a little bit more adult, and you're really looking towards those, you know, 10 and older fans.
Right.
So that they really want to, you know, the fans who really care about more of the storytelling element. So I'm right there with you. I think all of those things could be fixed. And even, okay, Iron Squadron, the Wenkathu job, Antilles' Extraction, all that we're saying on those episodes is that find a way to weave the narrative of the entire season into them so that they feel more important, so that when you watch it, you're like, oh, I see how that's kind of building. It could be subtle, you know, but just find a way to do that. So, okay, John, enough of this other stuff. This is where we come down to the last two episodes of the middle of the season, whatever we're going to call it, this fall finale. And we start that with the Inside Man, which really brings us back to Thrawn. I mean, he's really at the forefront. And not only that, not only getting Thrawn back, but we're also going to go back to Lothal and Ryder and all the people there, the small rebellion that was left. And I have to say, you know, this is the episode that, I mean, it just kind of turned up the crank. Like, if you know, in the winter, we turn up our heaters, you know, and this one turned up the heat. And I was right on board with this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. An Inside Man is very good. Like you said, Thrawn comes back. What I really enjoyed about it was the fact that they showed how the rebellion existed and did things without express military action. You know, the way of the saboteur. And I thought that was really cool because, you know, sometimes they throw things at you that you just don't expect, that you, when it happens, you say, oh, yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. I should have thought of that. But the idea also of, you know, Thrawn coming in and being the one to say, okay, well, this factory is having a lot of trouble. So guess what? You're all going to be locked in here until we figure out who's the saboteur. Like, I like that. And, you know, the savagery, the elegant savagery of forcing the guy to ride the speeder bike in the test zone until it explodes is, I think, really drives home a point about the Empire and Thrawn, about how, I mean, like, they, every time they've had Thrawn, and this is what's so frustrating that they use him so infrequently this season, is every time he's been there, he's a sociopath. You know, like, we've talked about how he's set himself aside emotionally from everything.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, there's this brutal efficiency in what he does. And it's thrilling because, in all honesty, what comes across to me is like a refinement of the Thrawn we knew from the Legends line. He's the same, but he's been tweaked a little bit. He's more frightening to me. Thrawn was never specifically frightening in the Heir to the Empire trilogy. He was fascinating. Mm-hmm. In this one, he's fascinating and terrifying because you know that if he has an efficient way to destroy you, he's going to use it, and it's scary.
Well, he feels so much, and obviously this is a direct callback to episode one, but he feels like the Phantom Menace, where he's just behind all of this stuff, you know, and he kind of swoops in every once in a while, and then he goes back out, and he comes back, you know, it's like, and when he comes into a situation like this, yeah, I think you're exactly right to call him just ferociously scary. You know, this guy makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up because he does not care about anyone or anything other than making sure that the Empire runs as efficiently as possible. And what I really loved is that this whole episode, when you go into that factory, you see all of these panels hanging, and it's the Imperial cog in a red background, just like a Nazi flag, basically. And it just felt so creepy to see that propaganda, just like you would in Nazi Germany.
and also evocative of how they used the banners on the parade grounds in The Force Awakens for the New Order symbol.
Yes, yes.
So that's a nice tie-in there because, you know, the First Order is all about getting back to the brutal basics. So you could almost see, you know, they're making an argument here that the First Order is also, you know, a descendant not just of the Empire, but of Thrawn's Empire in that
Ooh,
sense.
That's an interesting thought. That's an interesting thought. What if, random Snoke theory, what if Thrawn is Snoke?
Okay, well, if that's the case, I'm on board, and I'll totally go along with that. That would be, even though I believe Krennic is Snoke, and remember we're recording this before Rogue One, even though I believe that at this point, if they said, nope, he's Thrawn, I'd be like, okay, sure, sold, I'm done, that's great. Because that would even make sense because he's this great military mind and he's been, but I don't think Thrawn would necessarily build another version of the Death Star. He doesn't see, well, anyway, the one thing I want to say about Thrawn in addition is that what has really jumped out and what really jumped out in this episode in specific was his theme music straight up horror villain theme music. Mm-hmm. Like this is the type of thing that, you know, I hate to burst anybody's bubbles, but if I were ever elected president, it's going to be the music that plays when I walk into the Oval Office.
In the other door, are there two little girls going, come and play with us?
No. But Red Rum is written on every mirror in the place.
The other cool thing about this episode that was just, I mean, this had to be, I would say, the funniest thing I've ever seen in Star Wars ever was when Callus is like, well, we're going to have to make it convincing. And Ezra goes, okay, let me make it convincing. He throws him through the window thing, whatever. I mean,
the glass strategy panel that we saw on Yavin.
I don't even know what those are. But a strategy panel, but I don't know how those work because all they do is have line. It doesn't make any sense.
Sometimes they put little glowy things
that's
on
true.
Them.
They do. When he does that and Kanan says, Ezra, he's like, what? He said it'd make it convincing. He's like, I know, but I wanted to do it. And then Ezra says back to him, he goes, well, I mean, he's on our side now, so you'll probably get a chance. I mean, that it was legitimately the funniest conversation I've ever heard in Star Wars because I was not expecting Kanan to respond like that. Yeah. I thought he was going to be pissed, but no, he's pissed because he didn't get to do it.
Well, and I think that there's a great opportunity for them to, you know, Callus has to keep getting, you know, the snot kicked out of him, you know, that's how he pays for the cause. But, you know, but I like the fact again that Thrawn, he doesn't, you know, they've finally got a character that is obviously playing the long game and he's got his eye on Callus. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, you know, I kind of know what's up, but I'm going to wait until the right moment to bust you. And that makes his character much more, in my book, that makes his character a lot more interesting because we're so used to, especially in the context of this show, a villain who is concentrating on what they can get in the moment.
Right.
Versus somebody that's saying, it's not even that I necessarily want to get something. I'm really waiting to see how this all shakes out and then I'll figure out what I want out of it.
Exactly. And I think you're just nailing it because the fact that Thrawn is continuing to learn more and more about the Empire, it's like he doesn't continuing to learn more and more about the rebellion. He doesn't want just the small fry. He wants to get as much of the rebellion as possible. So the more that he can learn, the more that he can pick up, gives him the opportunity to be able to snag as much, if not all, of the rebellion at one time. That's his goal. It's not just, you know, Kanan or Ezra or Hera. It's everyone. He's trying to get the whole shebang. And by continuing to kind of see how they work in all aspects, not just the hit and run rebellion, but also the sabotaging rebellion that we're seeing, all of these different facets, he continues to learn. And I think that's what makes him fascinating and scary because, as we saw in this episode, he will use anyone and he will do anything to make sure that the Empire wins. And that is truly frightening. And again, feels very much like Palpatine. And it's so interesting to watch that the Empire and Palpatine surrounds himself with people who plan strategically as he does, because Tarkin's the same way. You know, so I think that's really
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting you call out the Palpatine thing, because something that Lucas said, if you watch the, and I think this was in Star Wars 365 Days, the big thick book of, you know, 365 pictures that John Knoll put out. There was a thing where Lucas called attention to the evolution of Palpatine's environments that you see him in go from bathed in red to red and gray to just gray. And he called it out, and Thrawn feels like he belongs in that world where Palpatine reaches this, he called it a Zen state of anger. He doesn't have a passionate anger anymore. He just has this constantly churning hatred that fuels him. And Thrawn very much feels like he belongs in that world. He's not passionate. He's like an evil Vulcan, basically.
Yeah.
And that's a cool
way of putting it. Who every once in a while loses his cool. Because in Hera's Heroes, he lost his cool with Constantine, I think it was Admiral Constantine, and that was just fantastic. Yeah. So,
he loses it for a brief second. Like, you see what's simmering under there, what you know is under there, and it escapes for a little bit, and then he gets control back over it, and that's what makes a villain like him so fascinating. Again, is that he has that inside him, but he has so much discipline that he can control it and function. And that just makes him even creepy. Like, you know, I mean, this is basically turning into a Thrawn love fest. But,
well, that seething anger, I think, is what the fact that he's able to harness that energy and pour that out into his genius, I think, is pretty fantastic.
Right. And this is a character I want to see more of. I want to see explored. I want to see in different situations. I want to see how he reacts to things. And we're sitting here talking about this episode, and here we are. We're going about, look at everything we learned from this character. Look at everything that came out to us. Look at every aspect that we're coming at it with, just this one character that's showcased. Why wasn't he more involved in the earlier parts of the season? I don't get it. I still don't get it. I'll never get it. I won't understand why he's held in reserve. I mean, I'm not saying he needs to be in every scene, because that spoils him.
Right.
But why isn't he in the season more frequently?
Yeah, no, that's going to be a great question. And I do think, before we get to the last episode, I think that's something that's interesting here, just with Rebels, I've noticed, is that it's almost like you do have to take the whole season. And the frustrating part about that is that there are episodes that you can pull away from that season, and you'd be like, oh, I didn't really miss anything. But then you stitch together all the important ones, and you're like, oh, wow, okay, I get it. And I think that's what we're saying is the frustrating part about Rebels. It makes sure that every episode in the season stitches something together about the larger aspect of the season, because each season has kind of had its theme. You know, I think the second season was kind of like, you know, it's like the Ahsoka theme. You know, we're going to talk about her story, and it's kind of...
Well,
you
know, the different paths other than Jedi and Sith that exist in the galaxy.
Yeah, and so... And it leads to talking about visions and voices, which this is where, you know, your frustration, you were worried that we'd never really pick that story back up about the Holocron and about Ezra and really Maul, because it had seemed like they could have tied that in a bow with Holocrons of Fate and never touched it again.
Right.
But they do come back to it, that this is still going to be a continued thread. And I mean, the huge revelation of where not only the Rebels are leading, but where Maul is leading, converge on a planet that we're all very familiar with.
And what's very interesting is I seem to recall a dashing gentleman or two, or maybe more than two, a few of us out there, who, when we saw the Holocrons episode, said, oh, yeah, Maul's all about Kenobi. Like, that is what he's about.
Yep.
But what's really interesting is it deals with the whole, I like the way they dealt with it in this episode, because it deals with the whole lack of clarity you can get from a prophecy or a vision, which Lucas, you know, talks about in the movies of, you know, oh, the answer to eradicating the Sith is on Tatooine, and Kenobi's on Tatooine. Kenobi is the key. Well, kind of. You have to keep him around so that, you know, that the real solution to the problem, you know, can survive and everything like that. But it definitely does. Ezra says specifically, we've got to stop Maul from getting there. Like, their mission becomes figuring out what planet this is, but Maul has a lead on that because he already knows what planet it is. So that's going to be a trick to figure out, you know, for them to catch up to him in time, unless he like goes off somewhere and it's sort of like the difference, you know, where did Boba Fett go between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi? Nobody knows, you know, like that sort of thing.
Well, so. I mean, seems like he just hung out at Jabba's for a while.
Yeah, no, I know. But back when they constructed when they were trying to construct that year's worth of stories between Empire and Jedi,
he just went back to Jabba's. Just never left.
Right. Yeah.
But no,
yeah, his ship broke down. You know, he had to fix his visor. Mm-hmm. You know, a whole bunch of things.
Yeah. You know, he ran into the Crimson Corsair. You know. No,
yeah, that's right. That's right.
So
now, you know what? I want to ask you a question though. With this episode, obviously this tickles a very special spot for longtime fans, mm-hmm. and especially people who have been fans through the prequels and the Clone Wars and watching Rebels. There are a lot of things that are specific fan excitement moments in this episode. His little shrine with the Darksaber, mm-hmm. and with the portrait of Satine and all these other little trinkets around where you're like, oh yeah, I watched the Clone Wars. I get that. Do you think somebody who didn't watch the Clone Wars would get as much out of this episode as we do? Especially with going back to the Witches of Dathomir, who haven't really played a role in Rebels up to this point.
You know, I do think that this is really a storyline and something that pays homage to all that's come before Clone Wars and prequels, and it's saying that those things matter. We're going to use those to draw stories off of, and we're not going to pander to you if you didn't pay attention to them, you know? And so,
yeah.
You know, maybe you just need to go and make them as important as we feel like they are because we're telling stories off of them. I think that's kind of what they're saying. And I applaud that, yeah. because all of this stuff does exist and it is important to the storyline, and it's nice to see from the story group that it's just as important to them, and it should be just as important to the fans. If it's not, if you know, you'll miss things. That's just the way it is. So I kind of like that.
Well, I like to think that this episode is constructed in such a way that if somebody didn't watch Clone Wars and they see this, they would be intrigued and say, ooh,
yeah.
Where can I find out more about this? And then, you know, somebody like us who watched Clone Wars can say, oh, you know, go to season X episodes, you know, Y through L, and like, you know, read all, you know, watch all of this.
Is this like an algebra problem? Because I'm not good at algebra.
I just failed. I think I came up with 4.
Okay.
And that can't be
right.
I
thought it was N, but maybe it's...
I don't know
anymore. Solve for X, John. Solve for X.
Why would you use letters in math?
I don't know.
Why would you use letters in math? That math is where numbers go. But anyway, you know, I like to think that if this episode does work, because you... Look, I think that everybody knows that I am extremely critical of when I think that they're just doing fan service for the sake of it. Look at, you know, our comments earlier in this episode regarding what Gary Whitta did with Wedge. I think that this is constructed in such a way that if this is the first time you're really seeing, like, you know, more about what Maul's been up to in the margins, and he walks back there and you're like, what is all of this? He's nuts. This is what is he doing here? And like, what's really interesting about it is that they have grown Maul's character in a very interesting way, because when, you know, he's basically telling Ezra, leave your friends in there. They can't leave. They're tied to the altar. You know, come with me. And Ezra says no again. Maul doesn't strike him down. Maul doesn't kill him or wound him or anything like that.
You disappoint me, Ezra.
Right.
Great job.
Right. And then he just goes.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's actually really interesting, because that's an interesting bit of, you know, I lack the word. I mean, it's not maturity, obviously, but it's a weird type of growth where Maul is starting to look longer term than just, because, you know, Maul was always, I mean, you know, in episode one, he's always this blunt instrument, and they've grown him in such a way that he's gone on this arc where this Maul is, he has enough control of himself to know that he might need Ezra later, so he's not going to kill him now.
Well, and I think it's really something to pick up on that Maul is looking for a connection. He's looking for, he even says we could be brothers, and he's lost something. You know, there was a connection between him and Savage. Something happened when Palpatine struck his brother down, and then he cried for mercy, which is something you never thought you would see Maul do. And of course, Palpatine tells him, you know, with the Sith, there is no mercy. And I think that there was a change in who Maul was. I think he actually liked having that connection, and he wants Ezra for his apprentice, but not just to be an apprentice. He seems to want him to be something more. And I think that's really fascinating that this character, you know, he came back from the Clone Wars and he was broken. You know, he was completely broken. He had to have his mind put back together by the Night Sisters. And I think in doing that, a part of the family of the Night Sisters became more important to him because their magics put him back together. Their magics cleared his mind. And there has been a change in who Darth Maul is. And as he's aged, I think he's realizing that, you know, I will not live forever. And what will my legacy be? Will I leave nothing? Or will I leave something through somebody like Ezra who will pass that on to somebody else? I mean, it's just a really interesting conversation that's going on with Maul. Well,
it's an interesting juxtaposition with the Sith, because the Sith, you know, like you said, with the Sith, there is no mercy. So even though Vader and Palpatine work together, it is the rule of two. They're trying to kill each other, you know, because they're always looking for something better. But Maul is a failed Sith. And I think the big turn here is that he's okay with that. This is a Maul who doesn't want to overthrow Palpatine anymore, which again gets back to, you know, what he says in the Star Wars Visionaries comic back from 2005 when they had the, you know, the little one-off comic book story about him tracking Obi-Wan down on Tatooine. You know, he says, "I don't care about Palpatine. I don't care about the Sith. I don't care about the Jedi. I want to kill you." Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all that matters now. And I think that's, I think it's interesting, because if you hold up the way that the relationships work in Star Wars, you know, master and apprentice works on so many different ways. Like, it's such an interesting sort of, counterbalance to see. Something I would like to see, what it would have liked to see, or maybe we can see at some point in the future, is, or we'll see it in episode 8, I guess, what would the dynamic be? Most of the dynamics we see are female-female in terms of master-apprentice, or male-male. I look forward to, hopefully in episode 8, seeing male master or female student, or even female master, male student, just because how does that change things? Does that change things? Is there a different dynamic that is inherently in there with a mixed match like that?
I think there are a couple things that were really interesting about this episode. One was just the whole thing with Maul and the fact that they're being led to the same place. They're being led to Tatooine, both the rebels and Maul now. And there's going to be a showdown. And it does seem like we're going to have, for lack of a better term, a very visionary encounter between those characters. And I think that that's fascinating, because I think it does help cement the rebels, especially Ezra and Kanan, as being pivotal in the saga story, because by protecting Obi-Wan Kenobi, we see that Ezra learns the way to defeat the Sith has to do with Obi-Wan Kenobi. Obi-Wan's mission, the one that he's on, that's been given to him from Yoda, is vitally important through the Force. It seems very clear that the living Force had, you know, brought that to Yoda as the plan, that this is the way it should be. And I think that that's a really fascinating thing to see, just how important Obi-Wan Kenobi is. And I guess we got our answer why they're not giving us a Kenobi movie right now, because they're not finished with him in Rebels, apparently. And, Anthony Breznican over at EW had speculated that he thought maybe, too, it could be more in the sequel trilogy as well. So Kenobi could be a much more important character than we ever thought possible by some of the things that we see in both places.
Now the one thing is, I'm going to throw a challenge flag out. But before I ask one last question, I'm going to throw a challenge flag here that if there's one thing that any Star Wars property knows what to do to throw you firmly in the check plus camp, is to give some love to Kenobi. That is like that is the surefire way to get the and I say this with love. I'm not saying this, to cut you down. I'm just like, the Kenobi thing always gets the Matt Rushing stamp of approval.
Oh, yeah.
And that's so. I mean, I think it's important to make that disclaimer. Much like if they bring back Qui-Gon's ghost, I'm gonna I'll talk at you for an hour about how that was the greatest idea in the history of humanity.
Yes,
yes, Qui-Gon, more Qui-Gon.
I just want to mention one interesting thing, John, and this is something that Pablo Hidalgo was talking about on the Rebels Recon about the Darksaber and the fact that it's back, and it's back in the hands of Sabine, and. For Mandalorians, I love the line from Maul where he's like, if our Mandalorian friend were here, she could tell you about, why it meant so much to them. And you look at that picture, Satine, and I guess got to call out Kevin Kiner writing some little lines of music there that were when she died between her and Kenobi. Fantastic stuff. I mean, this show, when it's on, it's really on. But the idea that she now holds basically a scepter of power for Mandalorians. And what does that mean for them? Will she be able to unite some of the clans behind them and cement them and their help with the rebellion? I mean, she has Fenn Rau now, but with that, can she help say, look, I've got the Darksaber, you have a reason to follow me now, and let's fight the Empire together. I mean, we have some fascinating storylines up in the air now with Rebels, with Thrawn, with the Mandalorians, and with Maul and Kenobi and, Ezra and Kanan. I think this is the stuff that we hope this show will do, this is what we want from this show.
Yeah, and so... All right, so we're obviously in agreement, at least from our perspective, strong finish. Is this enough to make you hopeful about the back half of the season? Or is this, what is your reaction? Are you like jazzed for the back half of the season? Or are you, look, I'll just go first. I refuse to commit my love to the show. Because I still fear that they're going to jerk me around a little bit on the second half of the season, and give me those episodes that are going to sort of tick me off a bit.
Well, let's put it this way. Okay, there have been, including the TV movie, it makes it 11 episodes, but we'll just say there are 10 episodes, okay? Out of those 10 episodes, 3 of them were, Win Kathu Job, Iron Squadron, the Antilles extraction. That means they're batting 70% right now for the season. That's pretty good. Those are good odds. So the problem three episodes were so frustrating, because what we want is the other 7. That's what they need to be every single week. I think they can do that. I'm right there with you, though. I can't say that this is a better show than The Clone Wars, because it's not. It just hasn't found that consistency yet. I can put on one hand the arcs in The Clone Wars that I'm just like, about, and most of them involve droids. But that's over 6 seasons? So, I mean, they did such a good job here, and I think that they can do it here on Rebels. I'm crossing my fingers with you, but I'm right there with you. I can't say, this is going to be awesome, because I don't know that.
Yeah, you know, I think that your batting average is a little more generous than I give them, specifically because I'll knock them because I'm still not 100% sold on the Bendu being a necessary character, and I am also maybe a little bit harder where I won't give them full credit for, you know, even the episodes that I'm not, you know, sort of rough on here. So I'd say they're probably batting about a 600, maybe a 550 for me.
Which for and batting average is not bad anyway.
No, it's not bad. You know, Ted Williams had 400. But I think that what it is it's not just that there were lackluster episodes. It's that it took so long to get back to what worked about the opening that it, like, I totally, like, when Bendu showed up at the end of the season, I was like, oh, right. Yeah, exactly what I was afraid of. Like, he's just going to be trotted out every so often when it's convenient.
Interesting animation note. So when Bendu disappears and when he's there, there are these slight, like, reflective flecks in the air around him. I noticed that when Ezra banishes the Night Sisters, which, can we say the Night Sisters are gone forever if they've destroyed the altar? Maybe.
No.
Maybe.
They're gone until they decide to bring them back.
That's true. But when he does
Maul was
that,
dead until they brought him back.
When he does that, there are also those same, like, speckly, like, flecks in the air, which I thought was really interesting animation, and it kind of reflects the idea of when strange force things happen around you. Little details like that. This show can be so good, and I think the last two episodes of the season, I mean, just nail everything that Rebels can be. So all we're asking for you from Rebels team is we love your show. Just continue to give us that stuff, and we're going to be the happiest fans in the world because, I mean, seriously, you're killing it with episodes like that. You're just killing it.
Yeah, and then breaking my heart when,
But enough with the with that stuff, John. You know, I've got some advice for our listeners.
Advice.
Like to get advice. Yeah. Yes. Especially here at the holidays, you're not sure what to get your geek friend. And I got to say, John, the best place to go for your geek friend is to get a subscription for them to Loot Crate, John, because Loot Crate, it does this amazing thing where they send you an incredible box of goodies each and every month. We've got exclusive stuff like pop vinyl figures and t-shirts and all sorts of stuff that the geek in your life is just going to, well, they're going to geek out about. So just go over to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter the code nerdparty, and you can get 10% off your order there at Loot Crate and make the geek in your life, well, happy.
Very happy. Very, very happy. I think it's a great idea, Matt. I'm glad that you gave that advice. And, you know, I have some advice as well on top of that. And that's for people to go to thenerdparty.com/contact, where you can get in contact with Aggressive Negotiations or any of the shows on the Nerd Party, like Punch It or SETI Alpha 3 or Missing Frames or Great Shot Kid, which is a pretty neat show.
Yes, it is.
Where can they get in contact with you, Matt?
Well, John, they can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. They can also find me on the Trek FM network doing The Orb with Chris Jones. I've got a couple more weeks left with Literary Treks with Bruce and Dan talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. And, of course, doing the General Geek Show over there, the godfather of this show, the 602 Club. We talk about all things geeky all the time. We've talked about so many different amazing geek franchises this year. Wrapped up Lord of the Rings. We started going through each and every Bond movie. We've got Star Wars, DC, Marvel books. It's ridiculous. And check out Star Wars, the 602 Club collection. That's all the Star Wars episodes in one place. You're just going to love it. So I think that you should go over and do that. But John, also, I just want to say that, you know, on this show, all we want for Christmas is reviews. Ooh, baby.
Oh, yes. There you go.
That's right.
There you go.
That's right. You can go over to iTunes, check us out on iTunes, and give us some star ratings and reviews. We'd love that. We really appreciate everybody who's already gone over there and done that. We have the greatest listeners in the world. Appreciate you so much. And we just want more people to find the show and join the love over here at Aggressive Negotiations. So hit us up with some star ratings and reviews, and if you do, we'll we're going to make sure to thank you on the show.
Absolutely.
Now, John, when you're not singing that catchy tune, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at Kessel Junkie trying to remove that catchy tune from my skull with a power drill. And you can also find me on Great Shot Kid here on the Nerd Party Network with Mike Schindler. You can find me on Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And where else can you find me? There's somewhere else you can find. Oh, yeah, over on Stage 9 on the Trek FM Network, also with Mike Schindler. I think they're pretty good shows. I think it's worth listening to.
I would concur, you know, John, and I think there's only one thing left to say tonight. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.